from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up,
the joint resolution is passed,
averting a rail strike.
France was our first ally, first country to fly the American flag after our revolution.
A state visit with a steadfast partner. Elation for Team USA. A complicated economic outlook. Financial setbacks for a conspiracy theorist. And the sounds of the season. The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
On this vote, the yeas are 80, the nays are 15. One senator responded present. Under the previous order requiring 60 votes for the passage of this joint resolution, the joint resolution is passed.
A potential economic crisis averted in the middle of the holiday season. This week, Congress stepping in to approve legislation that adopted an agreement between rail companies and rail workers. The tentative agreement was brokered in September with the help of the Biden administration, but some unions rejected it recently and threatened to go on strike this month. But the legislation signed by President Biden binds all parties by law to follow that agreement.
I know this was a tough vote for members of both parties. It was a tough for me, but it was the right thing to do at the moment, to save jobs, to protect millions of working families from harm and disruption.
ABC's Rachel Scott breaks down the terms of the agreement and says lawmakers on both sides of the aisle approved it.
Here's what it includes: a $16,000 immediate payout, a 24% pay raise, $5,000 in bonuses, and an additional day of paid personal leave. What it does not include, guaranteed paid sick days, which was a big concern and a sticking point for some unions. The House did pass a measure that would have granted 7 paid sick days, but that failed over in the Senate. Only one Democrat, Senator Joe Manchin, voting against it. But it did get a surprising show of support from 6 conservative Republicans who said that the demands from those unions needed to be heard.
But the lack of sick time not sitting well with some union members. Jacob Forsgren is a track welder from Lincoln, Nebraska.
I should not have to go 3.5 years without a raise to see this process through. I think the railroads need to do a better job of actually bargaining in good faith. So I guess to sum it all up, it's an incredibly frustrating process.
ABC's Jay O'Brien explains why the president and lawmakers had the ability to get involved in the first place.
The White House and the administration have the legal authority, and Congress has the legal authority, rather, to step in here because of the Commerce Clause of the Constitution and a railway law in the United States. That essentially allows Congress to approve the agreement without the rail workers say so and force those rail workers back onto the job. So what happened was, to take you back to the original timeline, the president asked Congress to step in. Earlier this week, the House of Representatives approves the agreement with an additional bill that gives 7 days of paid sick leave to the rail workers. Those bills and one other bill that ends up losing go to the Senate. Paid sick leave also doesn't pass the Senate, but the Senate does vote up on that a bill to avert the rail strike, and that's what makes it to the president's desk. That's what he signs, and this, in a sense, now compels those rail workers back onto the job under federal law, even though they did not agree to that deal that was brokered by the administration between the workers and the rail companies.
The Association of American Railroads said a strike would have cost the U.S. economy roughly $2 billion per day. On the economic front, there have been some positive indicators this week. According to the Labor Department, job growth was better than expected last month. ABC's Jim Ryan has more.
Nearly every day in the last few weeks has brought news of another round of layoffs in the tech industry, but the rest of the economy has more than made up for the loss. The Labor Department reports that U.S. companies created 263,000 jobs last month, even as the Federal Reserve worked to tamp down inflation by throttling hiring. The unemployment rate in November held steady at 3.7%.
But these jobs numbers might not tell a full picture regarding inflation, ABC's Alexis Christophorus explains.
There are a couple of things in this report that are not going to sit well with the Federal Reserve in its fight against inflation, namely wages, up 0.6% month over month, up 5.1% year over year. That's not great news for the Fed because higher wages means it's inflationary. Also, we saw something called the labor force participation rate actually go down. Not great news because in a healthy economy, in a healthy job market, you have more people entering the labor force. That's not what we're seeing now.
And ABC's Rebecca Jarvis says that prices for everyday goods are still high, and that could prompt the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates once again.
They have a new announcement on that coming up later this month. It very likely will be another significant rate hike. And if you look at what's already happened to borrowing costs this year, the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage has more than doubled, now 7.3%. APRs on credit cards, 22% now. That means if you are spending on a credit card over this holiday season and not paying off those bills on time, it is going to cost you exponentially more because of rates climbing. So you want to really think twice before you take on that new plastic. At the same time, we have started to see a turn in prices, in particular gasoline prices. But there are other areas like the grocery store where eggs are 43% higher, coffee is still up 15%. Rents up 7.5%, which still have to come down significantly more.
ABC's Gio Benitez explains why gasoline prices are on the decline.
Why is it dropping? Well, part of it is demand. People are slowing down a bit on their spending, but also some major oil refineries in the U.S. are back in action, and unpredictability from those COVID lockdowns in China has oil traders concerned. So the price of oil has dropped significantly, but again, how low will it go? Well, GasBuddy believes that the national average will drop to under $3 a gallon by Christmas.
But ABC's Elizabeth Schulze says some analysts are predicting another provocative move from OPEC Plus.
OPEC Plus, that group of the world's biggest oil producing countries, they could always decide, hey, look, prices are going down. We're actually going to cut supply again. And that would then send prices potentially spiraling. OPEC is actually set to meet next week. So some traders are bracing for that possibility.
Still, the holiday spending rush culminating with Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday proved to be a robust one.
$11.3 billion was the haul nationwide for Cyber Monday. Online shoppers spending that record amount, nearly $13 million a minute, to make purchases from their phones, tablets, or desktop computers. And according to Adobe Analytics, it's nearly 6% more than they spent the same day last year. The uptick in Cyber Monday spending comes as the U.S. continues to struggle with high inflation. Shoppers largely ignoring the state of the economy, instead responding to deep discounts from retailers. The discounts helping to drive demand. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
This week, we heard from the founder and former chief of FTX, the cryptocurrency platform that collapsed suddenly last month. The company is accused of using investor deposits to pay off creditors at another trading firm. More from ABC's Sherry Preston.
After the collapse of cryptocurrency exchange FTX, its founder and former head now says,
I wasn't spending any time or effort trying to manage risk on FTX, that was a mistake. What?
That's a pretty stunning admission.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, what happened, happened.
Sam Bankman-Fried speaking with ABC's George Stephanopoulos amid questions about where billions of dollars went.
Some part of it was just literal distraction. I really should have spent some time each day taking a step back and saying, what are the most important things here, right? And like, how do I have oversight?
And he admits,
I should have been on top of this. And I feel really, really bad and regretful that I wasn't. And a lot of people got hurt. And that's on me.
Sherry Preston, ABC News.
We'll be right back.
Fanfare and pomp for the U.S.'s oldest global partner. President Biden and the First Lady welcoming French President Emmanuel Macron and his wife to the White House. The first official state visit of the Biden administration.
France was our first ally, first country to fly the American flag after our revolution.
The president and his French counterpart discussing a wide range of topics, including the global economy, climate change, and their ongoing commitment to helping the Ukrainians fight Russian aggression. Before that meeting, Macron telling ABC's George Stephanopoulos that he is planning to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
How about Vladimir Putin? You said you expected to speak with him again. Do you know when you're going to speak with him?
Yes.
When?
In the coming days.
But when pressed by reporters after the bilateral meeting, President Biden said he has no immediate plans to do the same.
I'm prepared to speak with Mr. Putin if, in fact, there is an interest in him deciding he's looking for a way to end the war. He hasn't done that yet.
Biden adding that he wouldn't hold any meeting unilaterally.
I'm prepared, if he's willing to talk, to find out what he's willing to do, but I'll only do it in consultation with my NATO allies. I'm not going to do it on my own.
Macron also stressing that any end of the war needs to be on Ukraine's timeline.
We have to respect the Ukrainians to decide the moment and the conditions in which they will negotiate about their territory and their future.
Here again, ABC's Elizabeth Schulze on one sticking point between the two leaders involving recently passed U.S. legislation that aims to reduce climate change and increase domestic manufacturing.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been voicing concerns that the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act puts European countries at a disadvantage by heavily subsidizing American renewable energy companies. Pressed by reporters, President Biden signaled he'd be open to changing the law to preserve trade with European partners like France.
So there's tweaks that we can make that can fundamentally make it easier for European countries to participate and or be on their own.
Biden stood by the overall legislation, saying the U.S. must prioritize building its own supply chains. Elizabeth Schulze, ABC News, the White House.
After the high-profile meeting, a star-studded state dinner that also featured lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. ABC's Devin Dwyer has those details from our Start Here podcast.
It may have been in a tent in the backyard, but the first White House state dinner in 3 years, the first since COVID, was certainly something to behold.
Please join me in raising our glasses, which neither one of us have. There you go.
It was a who's who, not just of Washington, but of America. 300 ambassadors and secretaries, governors and mayors, Republican and Democrat, plus singers, supermodels, and Hollywood superstars, all sitting along titans of American business. First Lady Jill Biden hosting them all to honor the U.S.-France alliance, saying she was inspired by her mother.
She would bring out the china and put fresh flowers on the table and light the candles. Even if we were only having fish sticks from the freezer, she always made our dishes, our dinners feel special.
America's oldest ally was feted with butter poached Maine lobster, American caviar, ravioli with White House Garden squash, and world champion Oregon cheese, plus a performance by Grammy winner John Batiste.
Vive la France et vive l'amitié entre nos deux pays.
Perhaps most surprising, though, is how rare these White House galas have become. I crunched the numbers. Jimmy Carter held 25 state dinners by this point in his presidency. Ronald Reagan had the most of any president, 54 state dinners over 8 years. Donald Trump, by comparison, well, he had just two, and one of those was for France and President Macron.
God bless you. God bless France. God bless our alliance, and God bless America.
But for all the pomp and pageantry, the Biden White House says these dinners still do matter, mostly for the symbolism over the substance. And after years of strain between the U.S. and Europe, this one was about a reset and a reminder we all have more in common than what sets us apart.
On Capitol Hill this week, House Democrats elect their leaders for next year's term. More from ABC's M. Nguyen.
52-year-old New York Representative Hakeem Jeffries makes history as the first black leader of a party in Congress, replacing Speaker Nancy Pelosi after she led the party for two decades. 59-year-old Massachusetts Representative Catherine Clark is elected as Democratic whip, and 43-year-old California Representative Pete Aguilar has been elected caucus chair. Both Pelosi and Majority Leader Steny Hoyer decided to step aside for a younger generation of leaders after Democrats lost the majority in the chamber. M. Nguyen, ABC News, Washington.
Jeffries with this message to his Republican colleagues.
We hope that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle
as they temporarily inherit the majority in the next Congress, are willing to proceed with that same spirit of cooperation, fortitude, and mission-centered focus.
Here again, ABC's Jay O'Brien, who says that before the new Congress can take over, the current Congress has to pass a measure that will fund the government.
The most urgent thing on their plate is that deal on government funding. There has to be some kind of an agreement by December 16th, unless Congress wants to have a very long December here on the Hill. But also, Democrats are laying out their new leadership structure. They have new Democratic leadership. Hakeem Jeffries obviously taking over for Nancy Pelosi. So they're positioning themselves to be in the minority now, and also to deal with this new House GOP majority, which has their own set of priorities, border security being one, and investigations into the Biden administration being some others.
Also this week, a bipartisan vote in the Senate approving a bill that would protect same-sex and interracial marriage. Here again, ABC's Rachel Scott.
Moments of bipartisanship are rare here on Capitol Hill. 12 Senate Republicans did join every single Democrat to pass a bill aimed at protecting same-sex and interracial marriage. This comes just months after Roe v. Wade was overturned. Democrats hear that other rights could be in jeopardy and now heads back over to the House where it's expected to pass.
Members of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, found guilty for their actions before and during the January 6th attack on the Capitol. ABC's Andy Field has more.
It's the first seditious conspiracy conviction the Justice Department has won in nearly 30 years. Prosecutors hoping it will give militia groups second thoughts about future January 6th-like attacks. Oath Keepers leader Stuart Rhodes, along with Kelly Meggs, both convicted, could face 20 years in prison for trying to overthrow the government. Other defendants in the case found not guilty, but could also face significant prison time for other charges.
Alex Jones, the conspiracy theorist who claimed that the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting was fake, files for bankruptcy this week. ABC's Aaron Katursky reports.
Alex Jones filed for bankruptcy after a jury in Connecticut decided he and his company should pay nearly $1 billion for defaming families linked to the 2012 mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Creditors on the bankruptcy court filing included some of the families Jones defamed by calling the massacre a hoax. His company, Free Speech Systems, filed for bankruptcy protection in July, and Jones has mocked the verdicts against him by saying he has no ability to pay. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Protests over strict COVID lockdowns in China reach a fever pitch this week. ABC's Tom Rivers has more on the support those protesters are getting here in the U.S.
Chinese universities sent students home and police fanned out in Beijing and Shanghai to prevent more protests against the restrictions. But the world is watching. In New York, hundreds gathered outside the Chinese consulate.
The Chinese people need freedom. That's the only reason I'm coming here.
You can't listen to your fears because that's what they want you to do. They want fear to paralyze you.
Meanwhile, in China, the number of people who've been detained at the demonstrations and in follow-up police actions remains unknown. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
ABC's Bob Woodruff in Hong Kong says there are some signs that China is backing off some of its zero COVID measures.
China has been trying to stop these COVID cases for almost 3 years now, but this week they hit the highest number of more than 40,000 daily cases. Despite this, Chinese health officials appeared to be softening their tone, urging local governments to avoid lengthy lockdowns.
It's not an immediate threat, but residents and scientists are keeping an eye on Mauna Loa, the world's largest active volcano that erupted this week. ABC's Mola Lenghi is on Hawaii's Big Island and says the lava flow and VOG, smog mixed with volcanic emissions, are concerns.
Well, officials say air quality could deteriorate for as long as this eruption lasts, and there's currently no telling how long that could be. The other potential concern is where the lava will flow. It's currently crawling at a rate of less than 1 mile per hour. Previous eruptions have made it out this far, but it's something that could take days, if not weeks, based on the current conditions.
Team USA stuns at the World Cup this week. These fans in Chicago erupt in cheers after a game-winning goal. After days of buildup and some political intrigue off the pitch, the U.S. men's national soccer team beat Iran to advance to the next round in the tournament. Here again, ABC's Derek Dennis, who talked to some excited and nervous fans in New York.
USA!
No mistaking these fans at McHale's Irish Pub in Manhattan. They're packed inside, standing room only, watching multiple big screens for this World Cup match between the U.S. and Iran.
Like, emotionally, it's stressful, but it's so exciting as well.
Dami Bawala's nerves are shot. He's a U.S. citizen now, but born in Nigeria, cheering on Team USA, not just in this critical win or go-home match, but beyond.
Given where we are, and we're hosting the next World Cup, putting a good show in, it sets us up for the next World Cup.
He's already looking ahead. Derek Dennis, ABC News, New York.
Coming up.
2-1!
Yeah! Getting into the holiday spirit when World News This Week continues. You know it's a sign of the season when the lights begin to twinkle, the store windows get decked out, and the Christmas trees get their shine.
2-1!
Some iconic ones got dressed up for the holidays this week in New York. A lighting ceremony for the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. This year's tree is 82 feet tall, weighs 14 tons, and has more than 50,000 lights on it. In Washington.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
A choir sings a Yuletide favorite for the tree lighting ceremony at the Capitol.
3, 2, 1.
A bipartisan group of lawmakers like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and North Carolina Senator Richard Burr were on hand to see the red spruce from the Pisgah National Forest in North Carolina get decked out for the season.
Everybody ready? Let's count this down together.
Five, four, three, two, one. Here we go.
Elsewhere in Washington, President Biden and a group of celebrities light the national Christmas tree on the ellipse near the White House. It's the 100th year for the tradition. And inside the White House, First Lady Jill Biden unveiling holiday decorations with the theme, We the People.
The values that unite us can be found all around you. A belief in possibility and optimism and unity.
More from ABC's Ike Ajachi.
The decorations include 77 Christmas trees throughout the White House, 25 wreaths surrounding the executive mansion, and over 83,000 lights on trees, garlands, and other displays. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden unveiling the designs, choosing the theme, We the People, with the idea of reminding Americans of what united them throughout the holidays. The White House says it expects around 50,000 visitors during the holiday season. Ike Ajachi, ABC News, Washington.
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Joy Piazza. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.